Hey everyone, it's your host of See Jurassic Right, Stephen Ray Morris here, just dropping in to say I hope you've been enjoying all the new episodes in 2023 and 2024 so far. There are new interviews with filmmakers, musicians, scientists, the screenwriter of Land Before Time, audio essays about the rich history of the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World franchise, and all the news about the upcoming animated show Jurassic World Chaos Theory, and the as-of-yet-untitled Jurassic World sequel coming next summer. I really need your help supporting the show right now, and you can do that by leaving a tip and or giving a monthly follow on Patreon, patreon.com/seejurassicright. There are $1 and $5 tiers, but more is coming. Sharing the show, giving 5-star reviews in Apple Podcasts, and liking and commenting on social, at Stephen Ray Morris on Instagram and Twitter, goes a long way to help boosting the show's visibility again online in this new era. I'm an independent podcaster, and your support is so important and means the world to me in keeping this podcast running. Link to the Patreon is in the show notes. Hold on to your butts. Thank you, and now on to the show.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Filled with awe and fright, see Jurassic Right. Bathe in amber light, see Jurassic Right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, right, right. See Jurassic Right, see Jurassic Right. See Jurassic Park.
I mean, how do I introduce an icon? In the past, you've known him as the movie poster guy. He's one of the pillars of the Jurassic Park community. He runs Jurassic Your World. He's one of the most talented artists I know. And again, everyone knows him as Neems. It's Neems.
Well, hello there. Thank you for having me on.
It feels so good to finally chat with you on the podcast.
I mean, this is awesome. We're holding two big microphones, yeah. And I feel so official. So cool.
We're in person. It just felt right. I mean, again, I feel like your collection is legendary. You have immaculate style. So, like, well, thank you for letting me come over and
I know,
do it in
it's
person.
So cool to have you here in the collection room.
I know. Well, we could talk about that for a little bit, but actually, I do want to know. And I think I vaguely have an idea, but just for the podcasters. But where did your Jurassic journey start? Do you remember the first time you saw Jurassic Park or Jurassic World? We're approaching the 10-year anniversary of Jurassic World.
You're aging all of us.
Yeah.
Yes, of course I remember my first time watching Jurassic Park. It was in 1994, probably. 1993, 1994, whenever the VHS came out. And I was in a Kmart that no longer exists, obviously.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Man, the good old days. But I think it's because I had watched The Land Before Time so many times at home on VHS. And I saw Jurassic Park on VHS on a standee in the middle of Kmart. And I remember running up to it, grabbing the VHS because it was such a prominent. There was the black VHS with the logo on it. I turned it around. I just remember seeing Alan Grant's. They have that still image of Alan Grant in the rain, like looking very like fierce and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, Mom, I was maybe 3.5, maybe almost 4.
Yeah.
And I just remember like saying like, I want this. And I don't think she realized like what Jurassic Park was as a film. Like,
oh, okay.
Whether it'd be scary for a 3-year-old or whatever. And she was going out to like a dinner party as Persian moms and families do. And my dad actually stayed back and we watched it together on the couch, me and my dad. And I remember my dad like looking over at me, like making sure I wasn't scared. Like, but my eyes were just glued to the TV, and that's where it started. And I think I still have the VHS on my shelf somewhere. It's over there somewhere. But anyways, I have the same VHS. It's all ripped up and all that kind of stuff. But I kept it. But I've run through that VHS maybe 450 million times. So 65 million times.
Yes, of course.
Yes. But yeah, I love that. That was my first experience watching Jurassic Park.
That's so nice. And I wonder, I mean, obviously, because you do so much art and design and stuff, like, what is it about that original look? I just feel like the box art of that VHS, just like, it's so simple.
Yes.
How does it work so well? You know,
that's the hardest part is nothing I ever will do and nothing that anybody else will ever do. No offense to any other designers or whatever. Like, I think they'll understand what I'm saying. Nothing will measure up to that iconic logo on that black background. It's simple. And it reminds me of Michael Keaton's Batman VHS logo cover, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I think I talked to Chip Kidd, who actually designed the Jurassic Park logo. He's a very good friend of mine now, which is very strange to say. But he's the guy that designed the Jurassic Park logo that we all know and love with the T-Rex skeleton. And then I think after that, they put that circle with the two branched out things to fit in the word Jurassic Park in. But he was saying that logo itself, at first they were going to change it. And if you look online, there's a bunch of variations.
Oh my God. Some of the alternate Jurassic Park designs are wild.
Oh no. It feels like you're going to like some cheap, you know, Dino Park or whatever. But what they ended up with is now one of the biggest logos in the whole, like it's more recognizable than like the Apple logo, if that makes, or McDonald's, you know, like you put that there. And everybody knows what it is.
Yeah. No, I was just in Mexico City, and I think within 30 minutes, I saw a Jurassic Park t-shirt.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And I've always said this, and I thought I was living my own kind of life, but apparently not. I feel like Jurassic fans can pick out the Jurassic logo from a mile away. So, like, if you're in a store or if you're and in a different country like you were or whatever, if I see it out of the corner of my eye, I'm running over there and seeing what the product is, what Jurassic thing it is with the logo on it.
Well, and also I was going to say you're wearing a very fashionable t-shirt of the, is there a term that people call that? Just the like flame jungle aesthetic?
I think what it is, what he's talking about is that sunset that was on all the product
yes.
in 1993 with the sunset flare, part of the marketing package in 1993 that they handed out. And I think I was actually looking at this recently. Some people have the actual original cell that they used, and I really want that. And I'm like, I need to get that. But basically, they took a scan of that and then put it on all the toy boxes and the VHS covers, like the behind the scenes. And that's why the shirt that I'm wearing is the one that I recreated for Roosevelt's, the RSVLTS brand.
Yes.
I was like, you guys, you have to do a shirt with the sunset design. Like that hasn't been done yet. Like this, I guess.
Yeah.
And, that's why now I'm wearing a shirt that I helped design for Roosevelt's, which was a lot of fun. And I love those guys.
Yeah. It's just, there's something so, cause it's not like a jungle on fire. It's terrifying. You're just like, there's something kind of prehistoric,
mysterious. Yeah. And going back to that very like simple, the logo, and then if they wanted something added, like an addition to it, it's this sunset background thing that there's no dinosaurs on it or anything like that, but it's just very mysterious, and you want to know what it is.
Yeah, like you can kind of hear that photo, because it's not like a claustrophobic jungle. It's like
it's like a
island of possibilities or whatever.
That's a good, great way of putting it.
My question I was going to ask is, from then on, were you like immediate Jurassic Park fan? Were you just kind of all in after that first time?
I think what had happened was as I watched the film, and then my dad went to Japan for work, and he came back with the T-Rex, the young T-Rex, the Triceratops, I think Alan Grant, and the two Velociraptor, the brown Velociraptor. I'm talking about the Kenner ones, and the orange and red Velociraptor that made noise. And he came back with the Japanese version of the packaging was
on. Cool.
And I'm like, I'm so dumb that I didn't keep these, but like, wow, I was 4 years old. So how would I ever know?
Yeah.
But that's what got me hooked was those five or six figures and the VHS. Cause we watched a film together and he knew that I loved it so much. And here we are, 30 years later.
Yep. They're going on 31 now, yeah. You know? Because it's just so funny to think, because just because we're in Orange County, and I remember, to me, just because I was pretty young when the original Jurassic Park came out, mm-hmm. I was 6, but then Lost World, like that marketing campaign is what I remember the most. Yes. And I have a vague memory of being at the Irvine Spectrum mm-hmm. and them decorating for like around the theater for the movie premiere with that kind of...
Oh, that's so funny. I watched Lost World at the Irvine Spectrum too.
Wait, really?
Yes.
But it just was that thing of like, let's take a couple of like crates and fill them with like ferns.
So
you know.
Cool. Yeah.
To you, from like a design perspective, what is, besides the simplicity, like what is so evocative about kind of Jurassic over the years? Or like, what were the things that kind of called to you as you were growing up? Because I'm curious about how you got into design and art in general.
Oh, I guess that's a great question. I'm trying to think. For me, it was 100% the logo. And even at a young age, I would pick it out just like I do now. Like I can see it from a mile away, like I was saying. And I think now the marketing and all that kind of stuff, like kids love dinosaurs, you know, and it doesn't matter if you're a boy or if you're a girl. What's fun for me is if I go to Target, I'm not creepy in any way, but like when I'm walking by or whatever, I'll see people at the Jurassic section, the toy section. And there was this one little girl that was, she was super excited to see, I can't remember if it was the super colossal T-Rex or super colossal Indominus Rex. It was one of the two. And she was like, oh my God, mom, it's super. And she was so excited for this figure. And that made me really happy that like, there's a whole nother generation past us that's really excited to see these, you know, these boxes of toys or whatever. And it's fun to see everything together when it's on the shelf, where it's like, you have the Jurassic Park 30th anniversary packaging. You have the main line that they have for Jurassic World or whatever. But for me, like, I think what got me so into it was looking at the... Because remember back in the day when you'd buy like the Britney Spears CD?
Yeah.
You would go through the booklet and you would read each lyric. You'd look at every picture. You'd cherish all of that.
Yeah.
And I feel like that doesn't exist anymore, you know?
Yeah.
And I think what got me into design is... I was that same person where I, you know, like I had my Ellie Sattler figure in the packaging and I would look at the back of the box religiously like, oh, what's the other toy that I can get or what's not released yet? Or, you know, I would read all the words on the back and the way that they designed the box art. And I think that kind of meshed my brain or melded my brain into loving packaging and loving key art or like movie and turned into movie posters. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, I think that is just as... I think from both of us being online and seeing the community and stuff, so much of that does affect our enjoyment of those things. Like, it's just as important. I think one of my sort of silliest eBay purchases during lockdown was the box for the Lost World trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause I never had that set growing
up. Me neither.
But I was like, but the box art is just so cool. You have Kelly and like... You know,
Ian and Sarah,
and like the dinosaur in the like medical bay in the back, mm-hmm, the junior.
The fences around it. I know exactly what you're talking about.
There were so many afternoons, probably for both of us growing up, where you're the boombox, mm-hmm. you get the CD in, and you're like thumbing, you're like literally like sitting like a kid, like with your feet up, like reading the lyrics to like, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And one of my favorite soundtrack cover designs is the Lost World one, where it was that 3D design.
Oh, yeah.
And you would open it up, and then there'd be, the Rex, and I think the I can never say this name,
Parasaurolophus.
Thank you so much. there was that, and like the head moved and all that kind of stuff. So I really loved the Lost World CD soundtrack that had like the 3D kind of pull apart design.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely had that at some point.
Yeah.
The CDs. But I was going to ask, how did you get into actually doing art? Like, did you go to school for it? Like, how did that journey go from like, you know, I'm a good artist and now I want to go to school for it?
Well, it started in junior high. So I was 13 and they were doing classes for something called digital art. And they were trying it out on junior high kids to see if they would like Photoshop. And obviously Photoshop existed for, this was in back in 2003. So I think it was like Photoshop 2.
Yeah.
Or Photoshop,
yeah.
Photoshop 3 or whatever. And one of the first assignments in that class was take a movie poster and do something to it.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I actually didn't choose a Jurassic poster. I chose a Lizzie McGuire movie poster because it was 2003 and I was so excited.
Of course.
So back at that time, obviously, I had no idea what I was doing, but I learned how to like the lasso tool and cutting out things and very, very basic. And, you know, you just kind of remix an already existing movie poster.
Sure, yeah.
And ever since that class, I've been doing fan art and I've been doing all that work up until I went to college for actual graphic design and marketing and all that kind of stuff. So I went to FITM in Los Angeles, Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandise, and I got my degree in graphic design and in marketing. But I basically took what I really loved and obviously got the schooling for it, so I got certification or whatever. And then it turned into... actually, when I graduated, I didn't do anything with my design degree. I waited a little bit. And it was hard to find a design job. It's not easy for, I know a lot of designers out there, it's not easy to find a place that you actually want to be at to design. And sometimes you have to just work at a place that you don't want to work at until you get what you want. And I finally went to a place where I got to do not anything fun, but it was a lot of marketing design and I learned a lot. And then 2018 came around and that's when I started to become the movie poster guy.
I was talking to my dad before I came here and I was like describing your work and showing it. It was just one of those things where your work was even fan art was just so professional that most people, I mean, I think you've had to deal with that of like people thinking stuff is official and stuff not, but then now you are doing so much stuff that's official that's become so essential to the look of, you know, Jurassic in 2020, you know, 2023, 2024.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like how, like, because my thing, I feel like with like our generation is like, it's hard to get noticed doing original stuff. And, but there's something that can be so joyful about, like taking something that you like and kind of putting it in a way that kind of speaks to you in that regard. And was that kind of the impetus for just starting to do fan art and starting to want to remix things in the way that in your style?
I think I wanted to be a part of it so badly that sometimes the artwork that came out wasn't what I wanted to see something else. Like most of the art that I've seen out for Jurassic is actually really, really cool, especially during the Jurassic World era. Like I love the posters that they did for that. And the reason why I started doing my own was I saw a still image and I had an idea and I would just run with that idea type thing. And it basically turned into what do I want to see? And maybe what I want to see is what other fans want to see.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's how it started with Jurassic. And back in 2018, when the Fallen Kingdom trailer came out during the Super Bowl, I created a poster in like 5 minutes, 6 minutes or whatever. And obviously, like it was the money shot of Rexy in front of the volcano and Owen looking up at Rexy. But at that time, they didn't have the official poster out. And so I did that thinking like, oh, this is really cool. Like, let me extend the image. And this is before AI came out. And it wasn't easy to extend an image real quickly and all that stuff. But then I put it online and then just spread like wildfire. And months later, when the actual poster came out that looked very similar to my poster, I had to go online because all the fans were like yelling at Universal and they were yelling at Colin and all the filmmakers and they were like, you guys stole from Neems and this is his poster. But like in the back of my head, I was like, no, they probably did not, because that's the money shot that was probably going to be the poster anyway. I had my thinking cap on and I just was a little bit ahead of the curve. And so I went online and I defended everybody and I was like, look, it's not their fault. Like we had the same idea and nobody's stealing from anybody. And I think Colin really liked that I didn't, you know, say anything rude or anything because there's no reason to. And so from there, he asked Universal and Universal's digital marketing team came to me and asked me to make official poster. So that's where it all started.
Well, and I think both you and I are both very similar in that way, where we're both like, we all like the same thing.
Right.
You know, like, why can't we all work together instead of, you know, I just feel like for me personally, and this more in the podcast world, but I remember the great Buffy podcast wars of like the early 2010s, where it's like
iconic,
where it's just like, you all like the same TV show.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, nobody's eating up anybody's market. Like, we're all here to celebrate this thing that we like.
Yeah.
And I always feel like you've been very proactive about just like, hey guys, like, like, let's not forget what we're here for, because we love dinosaurs. We love Jurassic Park. We love Jurassic World. Like,
and I think we have to realize that the fan base is way bigger than what we think. And obviously there's a tier of fans that we all kind of know, like in our little circle, where it's like, we're the diehards and we're talking about it almost every day type thing. And I've gotten to know so many of them, and every single person that I've talked to is actually a very, very cool person.
Yeah.
And they're all from all over, you know, they're from the UK and from Canada, from United States, from Latin America. There's so many people out there that are Jurassic Park and Jurassic World fans. And during lockdown was my biggest time where, you know, we weren't going out or anything like that. So I think that's where I really honed in to become a bigger Jurassic voice, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, you know what? We're at home. Why don't I create an Instagram page for Jurassic World? Because I didn't want to post it on my movie poster page, but I wanted to geek out on all the cool stuff that I go out and buy and whatever. And so that's why I started Jurassic Your World, was because of that.
Wow. That was really, it was during lockdown?
I think so. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, it just feels like such an essential part at this point that I've almost would have assumed it was longer. But then, I do remember when you had an Instagram for the movie posters and then.
Yeah. But. So I kind of switched over to a Jurassic focused Instagram page because of, I didn't want to mix it in with my artwork. And I've been a member of back to the days when it was like 2009 or whatever, when there was like Jurassic Park boards or, I can't remember what that website was.
Well, Dan's JP3 page, I don't know if it lasted that long.
I think it was like 2007, 2008. What, or did it, was it before that?
That one was before that, because that was like around when JP3 came out.
Yeah, okay.
And, but I feel like there were, I feel like, because Outpost was also starting around
that time,
You know, like, were you, because I was not a Jurassic Park fan sort of consistently, like between JP3 and Jurassic World, like I definitely took a break.
Oh, you took a break.
In the sense that, like, because there wasn't the same kind of spaces.
Yes.
You know, and also like going to college and going to film school and stuff, like I definitely got a little snobby. But then kind of my 22nd birthday was when I had a Jurassic Park themed birthday party senior year of college. Uh-huh. And then as I moved to LA and discovered people like Jurassic Collectibles and, you know, and Outpost and stuff like that, that I got back into it. But
so I think for me, it was a very similar story where I went to college, like those were my college years. Those were the years where I grew up and all that kind of stuff. But Jurassic was always there for me. So like I'd walk up to Toys R Us and I'd still see like the 2009 line that they came out with or whatever, you know, like, I'd keep up with it. And I remember Google searching every few months, like, when is Jurassic Park 4 coming out?
You know what? You know, Dan's JP3 page may have been around for a lot longer, because I feel like they did talk a lot about like
a little bit
JP4 and all that kind of stuff.
And the human hybrids and all that. Like I was there for all of that. But I was more behind the scenes and I was very quiet. That's why they're like, when in 2018 came around, I was like, who is this person? Where has this person been this whole time?
I've always been here.
It's just, I'd never vocalized anything.
I wanted to talk about the actual process. I mean, I've been looking at
Amblin 40th anniversary.
With E.T. and Jaws and Rexy and E.T. and everything.
Yeah.
What is the actual process for making like a poster, like from step one, from the beginning to end?
I would say for me, because I can't draw to save my life. Let's start with that. I can't paint. I can't draw. I can't sketch. I cannot do any of that. However, I'm very good with photo manipulation and Photoshop. And I'm very good at gathering images and sourcing imagery and all that kind of stuff and making sure it looks correct.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because all your work, you just get the most, like, to me, what always blows my mind is like, you have the most stunning, like, close up of an actor. And I'm like, the quality is so good. The elements all like really blend together and feel, it's one of those things where I feel like with your work, there's an element of, it almost looks like it was shot specifically for this rather than sourced.
So one thing for me is I have to have good imagery. And a lot of the times for Jurassic Park and, you know, older films, that's hard because a lot of photography and stuff back then was all on film, which to me looks amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not as high quality as you want it to be, or it depends on where you get your image.
Yeah.
And that's where I start, is I start with a main photo and then I build upon it. So whether that main photo ends up in the final product, it might not.
Oh,
actually, sometimes like I'll start with a layer and I end up just deleting it because it just doesn't look good. And I switch to something else.
Oh, wow.
So I think that's how I start, is having a good base image and then going crazy after that. And then I always have like a aha moment where it's like, okay, this is where I'm going with this poster or whatever it might be. Like right now I'm making a, for fun, not officially, I'm making a 35th anniversary Land Before Time poster. And I, at first I was like, how am I going to do this? And then whatever. And then I had my main image and now I know where I'm going with it. So that's how it usually goes.
That's super exciting.
Yeah, like I'll be driving and I get an idea and I'm like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just the way that you're able to blend stuff, you know, like Julianne Moore, for example, from Lost World, because you've done some great Lost World stuff. And it's just sort of like, I don't even, like, that doesn't even look like it was something from the movie. Like, it looks, because, you know, it's with marketing stuff.
Yeah,
there's always that element of, like, and I feel like it used to be, like, there's so much old Jurassic Park stuff where it's, like, you know, Ellie and Alan high-fiving, like, on a trading card. And you're like, where did this come from?
Yeah, exactly.
And I feel like your art has that spirit of, like, this isn't just a still from the movie. Like, this
I try to make it into something that's still special but doesn't look like some, you know, I hate to say it, but like something that was like often a FX movie or something like that, you know, like on TV.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah. Cause again, everything about your Amblin poster just feels like it was made especially for it.
Yeah. It was for a thing called Welcome to Extraordinary that Universal did, which was highlighting like 40 years of Jaws and Back to the Future and Jurassic Park and E.T., all the Spielberg incredible films. And that was actually my first project with Universal. My first official project was Fallen Kingdom, but my first official project for Universal themselves was this one, and it's celebrating Steven Spielberg. So it was like the most like, okay, let me just do this real quick. No, but I was obviously a little bit nervous because I wanted to do a good job. And then secondly, it's Spielberg. And they said that this will probably end up on his desk for approval and all that kind of stuff. And I was just sitting there like, okay.
No pressure.
And it actually just came very natural for me. Like, this is what I was always meant to do. And Jurassic Park and Land Before Time and all that kind of stuff kind of led me up to this moment because I watched Back to the Future 100 times. I watched Jaws, not as many times Back to the Future, but Back to the Future, like E.T. is one of my favorite movies of all time. So I just wanted to pay homage to these films that I love so much in a way that, you know, I know how. So,
for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and then my question is, like, is there something that's different about the way you approach different, you know, a poster versus, again, fashion or just a toy or toy packaging or something like that?
Yes and no. So like with Universal, what's cool about that is I, a lot of times with them, I create artwork that ends up on things that I don't know where it's going to end up.
Oh, interesting.
So I have to make it a little more well-rounded, where it's like a vendor can take this and put it on a lunchbox, or they can put it on a puzzle. They can put it on a t-shirt. They can put it on a sticker, whatever it might be, because I actually don't know where it's going, and Universal doesn't know where it's going either, because it's up to the vendor whether they like the artwork or not. Mm-hmm. If it's something a little more like, if I know I'm going to be designing for the cover art for a Blu-ray or whatever, then it's a little bit different than making something that's a little more well-rounded.
Yeah.
So if I know where it's going, sometimes it's harder and sometimes it's easier.
Oh, interesting.
And then if I don't know where it's going, I just make it as cool as possible. And hopefully some people pick it up and put it on stuff.
So you're just like, send it off. And
yeah. And hope. And
yeah.
And that's what I've been doing the last, since 2020, is I'll make something and I won't see it for 2 years.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, and sometimes I make something and then I'll see it like a few months later. So some things are a little bit quicker.
Wow.
So
that must be a lot of trust as far as like, when you're, because you're making these things, and there's a period of like where people would ask me, like I was like doing some seminar type stuff or whatever, and it was just like, podcasting is a really great thing to get into because it helps you get over. And I wonder if this is true when you were, you know, when you first started putting your fan art online and stuff, where it's like, podcasting was easy because the feedback is immediate. It's kind of disposable in the sense that like you just keep putting it up every week. Yeah. And so you have to get over that fear of rejection or, you know, whatever. Like you're like, I'm just going to put it out.
Right.
Because yeah, like an animation, you know, I have friends who are working in animation and they don't see it for like 3 or 4 years or, but for you, was fan art also a way to like sort of just explore your creativity in a way that you could kind of see results?
Those reactions?
Yeah.
I would say yes. It's kind of hard because I was lucky that my Instagram page and my, like my Twitter and all that, like I'm very grateful to all the Jurassic fans out there for sharing my artwork. Like, first of all, like that's so great and amazing because of them. And that's where it kind of started, because people supported me in the beginning. And then it turned into then J.A. Bayona and Colin Trevorrow, which is the next huge step. So, and even like the actors and stuff from Fallen Kingdom and Dominion, all around, like all those actors and different characters, they've supported me as well, which is so incredible. So it basically went from the Jurassic fans to the actual actors and then to the directors and then now Universal. So it's just all around, like I'm very grateful to basically everyone.
Yeah.
So thank you to everybody.
No, I mean, it's nice when you can share things and you can kind of
get that reaction right away. Yeah. And then now it's harder because I sit on it for 2 years and I'm like waiting. I'm so excited for you guys to see this, but I can't share anything until then. And like, there's no way I'm going to mess with that contract and even keep a word. So it's like, I just wait. And until it ends up on a product in Mexico or like on a product that you see at Universal Studios or whatever. So
I was going to say, have you ever walked in somewhere and been like, oh my God, it's like out?
Yeah. There's been a few times where, or a lot of times, thanks to like a lot of the like Collect Jurassic and all that kind of stuff, I'll see on their Instagram pages because they're very on top of like the latest product releases and stuff. And usually I'll see it there first, or I'll actually see it in store or online type thing. Yeah.
That's wild. That's so cool. What are some of the, to you, sort of noteworthy maybe for your own creativity as far as stuff you've worked on in the last couple of years that you're like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe I did this, or like this was like a cool challenge that I overcame? Or
I think Jurassic Park 30th anniversary was like the most like full circle moment.
Sure. Because
I love Target, and for my artwork to go through other, what happens is like I'll design something and then other designers get my designs and they have to pick it apart and make it for the store or make it for the product or whatever. So I'm grateful to, you know, Target. I'm grateful to the other designers that take my pieces and then fit it into what they need to. And I think for me, my Jurassic Park 30th anniversary was like the coolest thing to be a part of. And I'm grateful to, there's a guy named Jeremiah that's always been very supportive of me. And like, he sees my vision. He trusts me with a lot of the stuff. And it's just been awesome to see that in stores. And then like on all the products that came out with Jurassic Park 30th anniversary. And there's so much amazing artwork that they did for 30th anniversary that's not even mine. It's like other people's art and hand-drawn stuff and paintings and patterns and all that kind of stuff. So my artwork mixed in with all that artwork was just, it was mind-blowing to me. Yeah.
Well, and it's so cool because the way that Jurassic looks now is very much reflected in the things that matter to us, you know? Because, you know, when you're creating stuff that is like, oh, here's the things that I see in this, and then it's kind of reflected back in that way.
Yeah, and I think the nostalgia part of it helps a lot because I had a lot to go off of recreating things from the 90s and the marketing that they had before. Like, obviously, that's easier for me because I have a basis of what to work off of.
Yeah.
But then how do you make it fresh and how do you make it a little more lively and bring it back to life type thing? And that's what I really wanted to do with the 30th anniversary as well.
It's nice because the Jurassic look is just so timeless.
Yes. And what's funny is like that sunset background, I wasn't asked to make it. I was sitting there and I was like, what? I needed the sunset background for a poster I was making. It actually wasn't supposed to be its own thing. And I sat there for 5 hours, I think. And I pieced together. It wasn't like one image. I put together like each palm tree that you see is one by one. I like turned them and like cut them out. And I tried to make it as perfect as possible, but then something a little bit new so that it looked just a little bit different.
Yeah.
Because there was no high quality photo of that sunset. No, I can't find it anywhere.
Yeah.
No one really could. So I was like, I need to make something gigantic and so that it's utilized on something. And when I showed it to them, they were like, we want the background.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, great, perfect.
Yeah. No, that always reminds me that there's a story that Peter Jackson tells in the Lord of the Rings commentary at some point where it's like, they took the New Line logo because it had been so low quality and they're just like, we don't want to throw this like, you know, 420. I mean, obviously it was film, but it was just like a very janky old Telecine or whatever. Mm. And they're like, look, we'll just clean it up. And then they like, New Line didn't even notice, but they're like, huh, just something about this looks like fresher and really nice, good. You know, but they were just out of that frustration or just that notion of like, oh, I need this element.
Yeah.
How can I... Well, okay, I'll just do it myself.
Yeah. And and they were so excited that I even took the time to do that. And that sunset's actually used in a poster with the Brachiosaurus, but it ended up being utilized, but then it ended up being utilized on so much more than I can even imagine. So it was great. Ugh,
that's so cool. No, it's just there's something. It just, because it also kind of, it makes me like think of the Jurassic Park book as well too in a weird way, just that kind of vibe. But you saw the movie in theaters again last year, right?
I did, actually. Yeah.
I think I ended up seeing it twice.
Seeing it in 3D is a very cool experience.
Yes. Yeah. That was, I saw it originally in 3D when it came out, and then very bad 3D last year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. My friends Sarah and Kaveh, we all went, and at first they didn't even give us 3D glasses.
Oh no.
I don't even know if I've talked about this on the podcast, but yeah, it was just one of those things. And then Sarah went out, who does work similar to you or in the similar way. Mm-hmm. And it was just one of those things where they're like, can we have some 3D glasses? And they're like, are you sure? And I'm like, ma'am,
it says Jurassic
just take off
Park
my glasses, 3D. Like, but what were some of the things? Because to me, I talked to Caleb Burnett, and like, it's one of those things where it's very like, you notice a new thing every time you watch.
Oh yeah.
What was it this time for you? Like, or, you know, when you rewatched it for the 30th, what were some things that like stood out to you or just the things that kind of come back to you all the time?
That's a hard question because I remember sitting there and I remember thinking, oh my God, I've never seen that before. Or I've never noticed that Ian does that. Or I never noticed like Ellie's like outfit looks that way. Like it looks a little bit different. Like, I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm trying to think if I can think of any of that like happen that I can think of right now. But that always happens with Jurassic Park, and that always happens with The Lost World, Jurassic Park 3. It doesn't matter what I'm watching. Even Fallen Kingdom and Jurassic World. Every time you watch it, there's something that you notice in the background or even the set design or something that I've missed all these years. And I could have used it in a design, and I'm like sitting there like, why didn't I see that before?
Well, I have a good example because I shouted you out on the episode with Corey Anderson. Mm-hmm. And because we did a whole Jurassic Park trivia episode, and it was the cat in the back.
Yes, the cat.
Which, in my mind, you were the first person to ever point that out. Yeah.
I was looking at it, and I was like, what is this cat doing there? And what's funny is I'm trying to think if you can see it on the 4K version or if it's on the original scan, you know, like the
open mat or whatever it's called.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can see it on the 4K version, but the open mat version, you see it a lot more.
Sure, yeah.
Because you see a lot more of that shelf, but I'm pretty sure, I don't know how I found it, and I'm like shocked you didn't because you're the cat.
No,
king,
I know.
But
again, it's that thing of every time you watch it. Yeah. And yeah, we had, you know, go back and listen to that trivia episode. It's really fun. But it's just one of those things where it's a game of like, because we've watched this movie so freaking much.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. Sometimes I find it hard to just watch the movie as the normal movie anymore.
Yeah, I don't think I do. I listen to the words they say because it's so important and all that kind of stuff. And Ellie Sattler's my favorite character, and Alan Grant also is. And Ian is too. Like, I can't. That's the thing is, some days it's Ellie, some days it's Ian, some days it's Alan. Like, there's no favorite character for me.
Yeah.
Some days it's Sarah Harding. So it's like, there's no favorite character for me. But you're right, though. Like, watching the films back, you see all new things every so often. So it's cool.
I just had a thought of, I'm an Ellie son, Yeah. A Grant Rising and a Malcolm Moon, I think. Everyone let me know what your what arrangement you are.
Yeah, we're going to do Jurassic Park. What is it called?
Big Three.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. That's so funny.
Even when I saw it in live with an orchestra, because they're obviously playing music and it's not mixed the same way.
Right.
I feel like there was just something about the way Sam Jackson's, like, his scenes, like, the way he smoked, I just noticed more because the music wasn't playing the same volumes or something like that.
Yeah.
It was just, like, one of those experiences.
You could hear his cigarette a little bit more.
Yeah. And, just the,
so cool.
I mean, he's just sitting there, like, puffing as it's just, like, collapsing or whatever.
So awesome.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Well, we can talk about again, I brought it up at the very beginning, but when did you, like you mentioned previously, that you didn't save necessarily all the boxes from childhood and stuff.
Right, yeah.
So, like, for a bit of context, it was like, it wasn't really until the Mattel Fallen Kingdom toys came out that I was like, I was texting Britt, just like, you motherfucker. You know, like, I honestly thought I wasn't going to be a toy collector as an adult because,
takes up space. Let's start with that.
But it is one of those things where the Jurassic World toys, kind of like Frozen was with Disney, they were sort of unprepared.
Oh,
you know, I mean, in a great way of like the Jurassic World, the Jurassic Park franchise came roaring back. Oh God, we're so indoctrinated in the iconic in the puns. But it's just one of those things where, like, you know, the Jurassic World toys, you know,
let's go back to the Jurassic World toys real quick. I was so excited to walk into a Toys R Us and to see Jurassic back on the shelf. So I'm going to go with the positive first.
Sure.
I was so excited. And I know a lot of people probably worked on it and they were scared that things would get leaked. And like, it was a whole thing. Like,
it's a big deal.
Yeah. Like, I remember seeing Jurassic World in theaters. And what's sad and really cool about it at the same time, what's sad is, I feel like that's the last big film that people waited in line for.
Yes.
I remember being in Tustin and Irvine Spectrum or different places. And this was before like the Regal app and all that kind of stuff. But people were actually in line. Like, you know, when you were trying to watch Harry Potter and you waited like until midnight to watch it.
Yeah.
This was the last time when people were waiting in line to see a film before everything shifted to, you can buy your ticket online or whatever.
even just like going with a big group of friends.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I remember seeing Jurassic World with like 15 people.
Yeah. I saw what's funny is I went with like 5 or 6 or 7 of my friends that I would never think would ever go with.
Well,
me.
Yeah, it was like everyone kind of showed up in that way in the kind of in the early Avengers movies, I think were like that too. But the slap bracelets, I remember because I was such a nerd, I bought everyone who came the night a slap bracelet.
I think I did too.
Right? Because it felt special.
I'm not even kidding. I went to Target and I bought the slap bracelets.
Yeah, right?
Oh my God. That's so fun.
Because it just felt like, this felt really special. And, you know.
Going back to the Jurassic World toys, but where we were talking about, it was very exciting to see people so excited about Jurassic World, like in theaters, but then also seeing the toys back on the shelf, because when I was younger, I didn't have my own money to go buy these things. And now that I'm older, I do. Yeah. So I feel like I'm healing a part of myself.
Yeah. No, I mean, Yeah, Mike from Podcast The Ride, he's a big toy collector as well, too. And it's one of those things where he's talked about in his podcast, like, sometimes I just like to sit and, like, hold my toy and just look at it.
It depends on, it definitely depends on the toy. But yes, there's some certain, not even a toy, like, there's certain things that I have in my collection where I'm like, I always wanted this, but never could have it. I think one of my gifts to myself for working with Universal, when I got my first paycheck, I was like, I'm buying the mobile command center.
Oof.
Because I never had the mobile command center when I was a kid. And it was that. And I never got a Sarah Harding action figure. And I have her there in a case and she's amazing. And I have one that's outside of the case as well. But those are my two like big gifts was I never got a Sarah Harding and I never got the mobile command center. And I was like, this is what I have to have.
We definitely are the same person because, yeah, when I had a little bit of an extra payday, a few, it might have been during lockdown, actually, but it was getting a mint Sarah Harding.
Oh, yeah.
Because she was so hard to find. Like, man. Ludlow's a plenty. You know?
And I remember my aunt worked at Target as a manager back in the 90s, and I remember begging her for Christmas, like, if you see her, Sarah Harding, I want it for Christmas. Like, that was the one thing I asked for, and I never got it because my mom and my aunt and my family, nobody could find it. So as I've gotten older, I was like, I'm going to go. And now Mattel came out with their Sarah Harding. And I was so happy that they created a Sarah Harding in that cool like packaging that they did with the Stegosaurus and the baby Stegosaurus. And I messaged the people that actually made the figures and designed them. And I was like, just thank you for giving me a chance to have that moment to walk up to the store and find a Sarah Harding. So that was cool.
Well, I mean, again, I just put out a whole episode about the Mementosaurus, speaking of Lost World, inspired by the fact that Mattel put out. It's just like, I mean, it's probably not as narrow as we think about this stuff, because obviously they're making it a toy that's being sold at Target. But just the idea that, and I think, I don't know what your opinion is about this, but I think because Jurassic Park obviously doesn't have the same kind of expanded universe as far as like literally just pure merchandise, pure tie-in content. You know, with Star Wars, I always joke that like, or it's not even a joke, they have literally have a figure of General Grievous's death, like the like literally like with the flames and, you know, when Obi-Wan shoots him. And so the fact that Mattel has just been giving us like
everything,
you know, like, I never expected any of this, there is some healing element of that, of like, oh my gosh, one of my favorite dinosaurs that is like in the movie for 2 seconds gets to have an entire figure that's affordable, that is like within scale of everything and, you know, is easy to find.
Well, I think that for me was when they released the first Ellie Sattler figure.
Mm.
So when Ellie first came out, and I think it was part of the
Legacy,
the Legacy collection. Yeah, yeah. I was like, I can't believe it's 2018 or 2019 and I'm going out and I'm buying an Ellie Sattler action figure because, oh my God, like that was my favorite figure growing up, you know, Ellie and the T-Rex and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that was the first time for me where it was like really hitting me like, oh my God, like they're actually going for it. They're making Alan and Ellie. And I never thought we would get John Hammond and Dr. Wu, and we've gotten
Ray Arnold.
We've gotten Lex, never had a figure.
Yeah.
And that the fact was really that special. Ariana Richards has an action figure now, like that's incredible. Like, I'm glad, and especially Dr. Wu. I never thought we'd get the Lost World Mercedes Benz, which I'm hoping that means we're getting the Mobile Command Center again. Because if they do that, then whatever, like
just lay on the floor right now, like
my money.
Jesus. I know. Yeah, that was one of my, I haven't finished it yet, but that was one of my pandemic projects, was slowly building a trailer, because it's just so obviously so expensive, like, and there's not that many. So I was like, I'm just gonna buy like kind of a half
the pieces.
Yeah, the pieces. Yeah. So I'm like halfway through it.
That's awesome. I'll show you. I have it in another room. I'll show you later.
As far as Ellie Sattler goes, because I mean, she is my favorite character in fiction.
I know you have her outfit. I've seen you in her outfit. You look iconic. Yeah,
it's just, I don't know, and it's so funny because I've just realized now that I've seen her outfit is probably the most homaged of all the Jurassic Park characters.
You would say so, yeah.
Because Grant is like, I mean, they're all iconic. Obviously,
you can spot them a mile away.
Yeah, but it's like, Malcolm is all black, great, like easy, like, but also a lot of things are all black, But again, like, it's a very, but you just open the shirt and you're there.
It's a leather jacket too.
Yeah. And then with Grant, it's just kind of classic paleontologist, but the little details like the bandana.
The red bandana,
why did I pronounce bandana like that? The bandana, like, if you throw in the hat, like, you're good, maybe a claw. But, like, the Ellie's with, like, the pink, and then, like, the salmon-y pink, and then the purple. Like, my nails are, like, that's probably the color of her shirt right now. It's even, I've noticed that, like, it defies gender, too, because I even noticed recently watching an old Bill Nye the Science Guy that he's doing the...
Yeah, and Pedro Pascal just wore the same outfit.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, my God.
Yes. I'm trying to think. Tom Cruise wore it in another film or something, and that's weird
that
he did. And I think they also did it in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Yes, and Rick and Morty does, too. There's, like, an Ellie Sattler homage.
So, if anybody thinks that Ellie Sattler is not iconic, let's, she is.
Yeah. I think it's undeniable at this point.
Yes.
That's so funny. I just thought, the line from The Lost World when Sarah's like, it's academic.
And it is academic.
Hold on, it's going to be bad. And then just imagine a giant Laura Dern smashing the trailer. Yeah. What is it about Ellie Sattler that, because I just feel like to me in Jurassic Park, she's just the most captivating character in the sense that, I've always described her more recently as, like, she's the only character, like, living in the moment in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, Grant is very, like, oh, God, what are they doing? Like, this is rad as shit, but, like, it could be bad. Yeah. And then Malcolm's like, I told you so, you know. But something about her, she's just very much, like...
She's very grounded. She realizes that people are in danger. She realizes that this is a problem, but then she's trying to get back home. Like, she doesn't want to die, like... You're right. You're very much correct that she is very much in the moment. But the thing about Ellie Sattler is, I think for me, like, I think I even realized at a younger age that it was different to see a woman speak up and, you know, have the same amount of lines as the main male characters. And I think that was so important. And I just resonated to her. I don't know why. And I think... Now, like, even more so 30 years later, I still, like, her character is still one of my favorites, and I'm so happy that she came back for Dominion and all that kind of stuff. So it was, and I'm so glad that they finally ended up together. So, so it was great.
And then also, like, I think she's the kind of character that can be the kind of, like, classic badass kind of Ripley, but then also be the one who's, like, crying a bunch. Like, it's like she can be, she's a full person.
Yeah. And that's all because of Laura Dern.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big time. And Laura Dern is, I've never.
Have you met her?
So when they.
Because we've been around her a few, like, we saw her at the Academy Museum.
So cool, yeah.
And I still have not met her. Perry Nemiroff wanted me to meet her at the Dominion premiere, but I didn't get a chance to.
Me neither. And I think the closest I ever got to meeting Laura Dern was when they announced that Ellie, Alan, and Ian were coming back for Jurassic World Dominion.
Oh, yeah. We were both there at the Jurassic World screening. Yes, Battle at Big Rock.
For Battle Big Rock, because Collider put on a thing and Colin Trevorrow was there. And I was sitting there and I was like, I need to ask Colin.
Oh, my God. Thank you for bringing this up. Like, this was just one of the greatest fan moments, I think, in all of Jurassic Park. To me personally, like, being in that room was like electric.
It was
truly.
So basically what happened was, is they were doing a question to answer after Battle of Big Rock, and it came time for me, and I was actually going to ask a different question.
I remember you told me this.
I was like, the only thing that I care about right now is, are you bringing back Ellie? Are you bringing back Alan? Like, I had an inkling that Ian Malcolm was going to come back, but I said...
Yeah, because he was in Fallen Kingdom already.
I said, are you bringing back the any older characters, any characters from the past? So, like, I really wanted Sarah to come back too, but that didn't happen. But he was like, yes, and guess who's here now? And here walks out Laura Dern. And I was like, I was recording on my phone, and I don't think... there's a video of it online, and I don't think it really hit me what was going on, because I was recording on my phone, and everybody was like, well, I bet you Colin, like... told you to say that, or like, did some executive?
No, I mean, we talked afterwards. No, were totally like, we were all in like shock and excitement, you know?
I was like, no, nobody's told me to say anything. I didn't realize it was, and then finally, I like handed my phone to my friend and I had to just sit there like, that's Laura, like, what the heck is happening? And I don't even think I heard the answer, but I'm pretty sure, yes, obviously the answer was they were coming back, and so they did. So
well, awesome. And it was, and I used to know the line, like, by heart, I feel like, because it was just kind of a, you know, that was that period of being obsessed with like the lead up to all this. And it was very much like, it was something to the effect of like, yes, and it's a main role, not a cameo, or something to the effect of that.
Oh, yeah. He said like they were coming back in a major role, all of them. Yeah.
Because, you know, it was that thing of, I personally really loved the way that they used Malcolm in
Fallen Kingdom.
Mm-hmm. It was, and it wasn't only later that I realized it was kind of a callback to the book where Grant talks about being a witness.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've talked to previous guest, Ellen G. Dow, who, you know, works in science. And it's like, that's a real thing that scientists do. Like,
they have to go in and sit
and like
give their responses to things.
Yeah. Because then it helps a jury, or it helps make a case for, you know, something climate or something nature or science related. So I loved that. But then, and then to me, I feel like, and I don't know how you feel, but Lost World is the Malcolm sequel of Jurassic.
Yes.
JP3 is the Grant sequel of Jurassic.
And Dominion is the Ellie. Yeah, exactly. And I love that, that came to fruition as well, because she deserved her own.
Yeah.
More than a cameo in Jurassic Park 3. I like when you drove, once you drove away from that driveway in Jurassic Park 3, I was like, no, come back.
Yeah.
And she does come back for a little bit and she saves the day in Jurassic Park 3, but you know, because she's the queen.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But seeing Jurassic World Dominion be a movie kind of framed around the notion of she's trying to figure something out. Mm. And it's almost like she's the person on a heist who's like bringing everyone in.
Yes, exactly.
Like when we come into Dominion, that's like the third act of like, I'm getting ready for my heist movie.
Yes, exactly. You know? Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's all because of, she's trying to prove something that these horrible people are doing to our planet.
Yeah. I'm excited this year. Cause I don't know if you've sat and watched all the movies in a row.
Probably. Yeah. At some point.
I don't think I've actually like, insofar as like, I'm just going to sit back and enjoy this and just kind of watch the whole saga kind of play out. I haven't quite done that yet, but I'm really looking forward
to it. What's funny is I keep watching them out of order.
Well, see, yeah, that's what I do. Cause yeah, like Caleb just said on his episode that like, once he starts the first one, he just has to go in order every time. And I'm like, that's so much discipline and restraint because I'm just like, I've been watching, obviously doing research for that Momentosaurus episode, rewatching Lost World a lot and stuff. So I'm kind of in that space. Yeah.
If it's a cloudy day, I can watch Lost World. I love a cloudy day in Lost World.
Yeah, yeah. That is a vibe.
It is a vibe.
This has been so incredible. I just have a few more questions.
Sure.
Anything. I feel like we've tackled a lot.
Anything you want.
Well, okay. Two classic Jurassic questions is, would you go to Jurassic Park or Jurassic World? Mm-hmm. You know, any kind of restraints or constraints, whatever is in your head, like, but if Jurassic Park opened tomorrow, Jurassic World opened tomorrow, like, would you go?
Yes.
Didn't finish the question. Didn't need to.
Like the fact that The Lost World, they were going to open Jurassic Park San Diego. And as a 7-year-old, I knew I was so close to San Diego.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I'm like 40 minutes from this place. Like, and I really wish my personal thing is I wish they would actually make a outside of Universal Studios, and maybe it's Universal Studios owned, but it's somewhere else type thing, that they open a dino park. Because they do Jurassic World, the exhibition does an incredible job with the animatronics and the way. Imagine Jurassic World, the exhibition, but its own theme park.
Ugh.
Obviously, we're not going to get real dinosaurs. Well, I can't say that.
At this point now.
My God. They're doing crazy stuff with DNA or whatever. But imagine a theme park that was based around, it could be Jurassic. You can call it Jurassic Park San Diego or Jurassic Park New York, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
And build a place where, because kids love, I always see these like off-brand
Jurassic Quest
you know, all that kind of stuff. And people pay money to go like big time. They take their families and all that kind of stuff. So imagine a place that you can go that is kind of like going to Universal Studios or Universal Studios Florida, where they have a huge Jurassic area. It's all themed, but you're walking around. It's kind of like the San Diego Zoo,
but
it's dinosaur themed, which is basically Jurassic World.
Yeah.
I think they'd make so much money if they did that. So,
well, and it's also like, I'd even, because there's like the Ogden Dinosaur Park in Utah where it's like, and they're just statues. Like, I don't even need animatronic at that point. Like,
yeah, people go just for statues. And I'm saying, like, if you put a little budget into it and make a few Rexies and make a few Indominus Rexes or whatever it is, Raptors. And they do an amazing job with Stiggy. Like, it looks incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
I can never say that name either.
Stiggy Mullick?
Yeah, that one. I think that people would go, but then another cool thing would be is why not make that and then have some of the funds go to the museums and then, like, you know, so maybe good. Like 1.5% or 1% of the ticket sales goes towards our paleontology or whatever it might be. So I that's like my dream is for them to do something like that.
Yeah. No, that would be because I almost think of, and I haven't been obviously, but the Studio Ghibli theme park in Japan where it's almost less a theme park and more of like, hey, we're just sort of recreating everything.
Yeah.
And the theme is like the thrill of like, oh my God, I'm like looking at the house from My Neighbor Totoro.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
and that's thrilling enough. I don't need to have a roller coaster go through it. I mean, look, I love a roller coaster. I was just on Podcast The Ride talking about the Velocicoaster, but going to Kauai in 2021 or no, going to Oahu in 2018, whatever, for Christmas one year and getting to do Kualoa Ranch.
Yes.
And getting to see the actual Jurassic World set and
amazing stuff.
Amazing. Like, people just want to be
immersed.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
And when I did that, like, yes, it was very cool to visit the set, but obviously it was made to be a set. It was never made to be an attraction that people actually go visit.
Yeah, you're just seeing it from the angle. Like, so getting to be in the room where Claire and Owen and Eric Edelstein are like, huh? Yeah. And you're like, but like, it's all wood, you know?
Yeah, and styrofoam too.
Yeah, yeah.
People don't realize that half of that, the walls and stuff are styrofoam, which is horrifying when you're standing up there. But yeah, I think they would, I think a real Jurassic Park, or if a real Jurassic Park was around with like real dinosaurs, I still would go.
Yeah. Yes.
That's my answer.
It's hard because you're like, Jurassic World was open for 10 years and nothing bad was reported.
And there's always going to be bad people, but you haven't seen anybody take over Disneyland yet. So
true. And then my other question was, of course, like the classic, how would you go? You know, if Jurassic Park didn't go well, like in the movies, and you're on the run, what's the way that you'd want to go from a dinosaur?
I'd call Ellie Sattler and tell her to get the Navy, the Coast Guard, and no, I'm just kidding. I think a T-Rex bite, as long as it's quick enough, that's good for me.
Yeah. It just feels epic rather than like being stepped on.
Yeah, I don't want to be stepped because that's painful.
You don't want to go like by the way of Carter.
Yeah,
you
know? No Carter.
Yeah.
I want Carter. I want a Carter action figure.
I know, because then we have the Mementosaurus. So it's just like the idea that now like we can just recreate scenes from the movie like full cloth is just.
We're almost there.
Yeah.
We need a Kelly action figure too. Did we get one?
No, we haven't. A new one. We haven't got a new one yet.
Okay.
I would love a Mattel Kelly figure.
Yes.
Neems, this has been so much fun. My last question I wanted to ask is back to the art side, because I just feel like there's probably going to be people listening who just really loved seeing your journey. And again, it's always cool when companies are looking at the community and being like, hey, like there's some incredibly talented people here. They have the passion. They have the heart. The thing that they love, they want it to reflect how much they love it.
Right.
And would you have any advice for anybody that's like, wanting to create, whether it's art or just some, you know, wanting to get involved in a community or just any kind of stuff like that?
Yeah, I would say the most important part is obviously hone in on your skill. Make sure that you actually can do something. You can actually provide some kind of skill set to whether it's design, whether it's coding, whether it's music, composing, whatever you're trying to do. And then your social presence online has to be you. And it has to be positive, and you cannot be one of those people that is ragging on others all the time and ragging on the studio. You can't be, your opinion is important, but there's a certain way to have your opinion. And so you have to be careful about that. And then I think just talking to the right people.
Yeah.
And don't be a kiss ass, but also don't be a dick, but then be kind and be yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And if you are a good person, that'll translate no matter what. So,
yeah, I love that.
Yeah,
it's very cool.
Thanks.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you. Finally, we did this.
So,
so exciting. Thank you.
Where can people follow you, find you?
You can find me on Instagram at the Movie Poster Guy. and on Instagram at Jurassic Your World. And
yeah.
My usernames are the same on everything else, so Twitter and Threads and whatever, TikTok and oh my God, there's like 600 things. I'll see you there.
Thank you so much. And thank you guys for listening, and hold on to your butts until next time. We'll see you soon.
See ya.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.